Every Woman is a womanist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Mid-Coast Radio Project, Incorporated.
That was Amy Bell, our illustrious engineer and co-host, and also president of Kansas Now, I might add. And I'm Sharon Lockhart, and we're here in the studio today with Dolores Furtado, with the Kansas League of Women Voters, Linda Vogel, Kansas City League, Clay, Platt, and Jackson County. I probably messed that up, Jackson, Clay, and Platt County. And also Cheryl Barnes, who's been on the show recently talking about women and how important it is for women to vote. And she's also a board member of the Kansas City League. And they'll be back with us to talk about the importance of voting in this election and some of the issues on the ballot after we hear from Amy reading Women's E-News.
Cheers. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, European Union and Republic of Turkey provide 338 million euros, about $248 million, for female entrepreneurs in Turkey. Daily Sabah reported October 22nd. The program aims to finance 15,000 women-led enterprises across Turkey, while also offering various training and educational services to help women run their companies. More news to cheer this week. 78% of Texas Hispanic voters say a woman has a right to make their own decisions about abortion without politicians interfering, finds an October 22nd study commissioned by the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Rights. The study also finds that most Texas Hispanic voters seem willing to disagree with church leaders on the legality of abortion. The poll finds 76% regard birth control as a part of basic health care and that it should be covered no matter where a woman works. French feminist Caroline Dihas is launching a website, macholand.fr, to denounce and challenge sexism, NPR reported October 17th. The site targets politicians and advertisers. One of them is Gerard Collomb, the mayor of France's second-largest city, Lyon. Collomb recently said that the country's education minister, Najat Vallaud Belkacem, got her job simply because President François Hollande loves beautiful women. The site invites users to join the so-called action against Colomb. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella said he was completely wrong to suggest that women should not ask for raises, Time reported October 20th. Nadella previously said women should wait for good karma to raise their wages instead of asking directly. After coming under fire, Nadella apologized and reinforced his apology in his latest interview with CNBC. "It's been a very humbling and learning experience for me," said Nadella. A week after a Washington rabbi was charged with videotaping women converting to Judaism as they disrobed for ritual baths, the National Association of Modern Orthodox Rabbis announced that it would require the appointment of ombudswoman to handle any concerns from women about the conversion process. The New York Times reported October 20th. Besides the appointment of ombudswomen, the association would also name a commission that would include women as members to recommend ways to prevent abuses of the conversion process. Jeers. Amid talks of freeing over 200 female hostages they seized in April, suspected Boko Haram members kidnapped at least 25 more girls in an attack on a remote town in northeastern Nigeria, Reuters reported October 23rd. Talks to release the schoolgirls took place this week between the government and a Boko Haram representative in the capital of neighboring Chad. More news to cheer this week. Saudi Arabia's Interior Ministry issued a warning to women not to get behind the wheel in defiance of the kingdom's rules that allow only men to drive, Reuters reported October 23rd. The ministry made the announcement after a renewed social media campaign to challenge the law by driving in public ahead of the October 26th anniversary of a demonstration last year in which dozens of Saudi women took the road in protest of the ban on female drivers, leading to some arrests. As a woman gets heavier, her chances of working in low-paying, physically taxing jobs grow, according to a study from Jennifer Schenal, a law professor at Vanderbilt University. The Huffington Post reported October 24th, though obese men are more likely than men of average weight to work in lower-paying physical jobs, the effect isn't nearly as strong as it is for women. Obese women make $7 less than their average weight counterparts, while obese men make just $2 less. The wage gap for Latinas living in California is the worst in the country, the National Women's Law Center said October 23rd in an analysis of the new census data. Louisiana has the highest wage gap for black women. The wage gap is based on a comparison between the earnings of African-American women and Latinas working full-time and white, non-Hispanic men across the country. Iranian demonstrators gathered outside government buildings in Isfahan and Tehran to protest the recent spate of acid attacks on women, the International Business Times reported October 22nd. Security forces reportedly tried to disperse the demonstration at the Iranian Parliament building in Isfahan, calling it a political gathering. In the past 2 weeks, about a dozen women have had sulfuric acid thrown on their faces and bodies by a group of motorcyclists. It is widely believed that the women were targeted for not complying with the Islamic dress code in public places.
Thank you, Amy, for reading Women's E-News this week. And let me correct that our guest from the Kansas City League is Linda Smith. Actually, it's Linda Vogel Smith, and I understand I misnamed her or left out one of her names a little earlier. And Cheryl Barnes and she from Kansas City League are going to talk about some issues facing Missouri voters this election. And then later we'll hear from Dolores Furtado from the Kansas League about issues. You're going to start for us, Linda?
Yes. Thank you very much, Sharon. And I want to comment on what Amy said at the very beginning about women and getting out to vote. This is absolutely essential because there is a war on women. And if you don't get out and vote, you're not going to be able to protect yourself in the way that you would like and to advance the cause of women and your families, including your husbands and friends. But let me move now to say something about the League. The League of Women Voters is a very old organization, and it goes back to the time of, indeed, our great-grandmothers or grandmothers. And we are nonpartisan. We never endorse one candidate over another. We are really very issue-focused. And we are, you know, we're known for registering voters, for hosting candidate forums. I think one of the most important things we do is we work to educate voters. And in this particular case, we're really thrilled to have the opportunity to be on this program to say some things that resonate with women about the things that are on the ballot. And, you know, before becoming involved with the League, I found myself going to the polls and really not understanding what I was voting for. Something might look very good on the surface, like the first thing we're going to talk to you about. But what may look good on the surface has a history to it and may have implications for you personally that you may not realize. The League studies issues and takes positions on ballot measures only after careful study. And indeed, even then, it's within the context of positions that have been carefully developed at a national level and state level. And we don't just freelance it. We have taken a variety of factors into account. And next week, voters are going to find that there are four proposed constitutional amendments on the Missouri ballot. And in a minute, my colleague Cheryl's going to say something about and I think Dolores, too, about this matter of these constitutional amendments. Why in the world were we doing this? but we'll get to that in a moment. One of our biggest concerns on the ballot next Tuesday is the proposed amendment number 6 on early voting. And I think we could all agree, hey, it's great to have the chance, if you're going to be out of town or you're going to be in the hospital or you have some other reason that you can go and vote early. So, this sounds like a good idea. But what you need to know is this is an absolutely terrible proposal. It isn't for a real, truly early voting system. And here are some of the things that are wrong with it. And I'm saying this in part from my perspective of having been a working mother. But first of all, it would only go into effect if the legislature chooses to fund it. And the legislature may not choose to fund it. But to make matters worse, this is only for early voting, only for a period of days, of 6 days prior to the election. But voting on Saturday would be prohibited. And then not only that, you would have to vote during normal business hours at your board of election. Now, I live north of the river, and I called the Board of Election in Platte County in Clay County, because I wanted to help my daughter-in-law, who is ill, get to the polls early. And they said, well, I could go either to Liberty or to Gladstone. Now, some people rely on public transportation. Well, if you don't happen to have a car, how are you going to get to Liberty or Gladstone to do your early voting? And I think you could run into the same kind of problem in, say, Kansas City proper. You'd have to go down to Union Station, to the offices there. So there are some serious concerns about how this would actually work out. But I think one of the most serious things is that you'd have to do this only during normal business hours at the Board of Election, and you could not do it on a Saturday. And I know from my own experience as a working mom when you're trying to pick up your child on time, get the groceries, get home, and then the notion that need to wind this part up, but not only for women, but for men. This is something that should not go forward. Lastly, I want to say that a problem is if this passed as a constitutional amendment, it would likely block efforts to have a genuine, effective early voting system in our area.
What is the reasoning to refuse early voting on Sunday? I mean, to constitutionally constitutionally block early voting on Saturday. I heard some statistics that Saturday voting days show the best turnout for African Americans.
Well, I was going to say that I think the same motivations that are behind efforts of voter suppression are at play here. I can't speak for the people who introduced this, but there was.
So, they don't have like a reason that's, well, the offices aren't open on Saturday now, and it's going to cost X amount of dollars to have the Saturday staff, or they don't have like a real viable explanation for not allowing Saturday voting.
Not that I know of, other than a financial concern. And as you, I think everyone knows, because of a variety of budgetary decisions and that were and legislation passed at the state level, money is tight. And but I think, you know, even more to the point is that some of the same thinking that has gone into the proposals that would suppress voting by certain populations are at play in this situation as well.
It does seem as though these people that we have sent, somebody sent them to Jeff City and to Topeka to represent the people, and they forget why they're there. So they have their own agendas.
I think that's right, Sharon. We, the League of Women Voters studied this. In fact, we studied it because I got so mad when I went to vote and the fellow in front of me said he was going to vote and he's going to make his wife pick up the children. It was her day and she wouldn't be able to vote. And I said, how come we don't have early voting? And they said, well, you have to have an excuse. And I thought that I was just hopping mad. And we just happened to have a board meeting the following Monday. And I said, well, that's not right. And we all said, that's not right. And we decided we would have a state study, which, you know, is kind of a big project. And Kansas City hadn't even done a state study. And I'd never done a state study. And I think Dolores could speak to that a little bit when she starts chatting with us. But we did a state study, and we found out that we are one of only 14 states that doesn't allow absentee voting or advance voting or early voting of some sort. You know, it's just Missouri is backwards, and the legislators, you know, to your point, Amy, not doing what they're supposed to be doing. When Secretary of State Matt Blunt was a Republican, was Secretary of State, then the Democrats opposed early voting. And then when Robin Carnahan brought it up, then the Republicans were opposed to it. And so we end up losing out, and we end up more people not voting in Missouri. It makes it just so darn difficult to vote when you have that one day. And what we learned was, there was a tornado alert, and so they had to close down the poll set for like 4 hours until the storm passed. It's just nuts to put all of that important decisions on one day.
So the Republicans and the Democrats haven't quite figured out which one is at an advantage for early voting. So whenever it looks like one of them has the advantage over the other, they assume that that's going to be when they're not going to have an advantage with early voting, and so they oppose it.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And the voters...
It was hard to even say that out loud. That was something that when I'm saying that sentence, it didn't even make sense in my head.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And then we've got these constitutional amendments, which really don't belong in the Constitution. These issues, you know, I would say vote no on all of them. But in particular, 6 is egregious because it harms us for voting, you know, for or against anything else. And then we've got 3 we're not happy with, for the teacher evaluation. And I don't have kids in school, but it just seems like it is a bad way to force teachers to teach to test as opposed to being evaluated on what they're doing. I look at the families in my neighborhood. I'm in the Blue Hills neighborhood. I bought coats for 3 or 4 little kids who helped me with my yard. We have a cooking night when they come over, and we cook because they want a good meal. Their moms work until 2 or 3 jobs. One of them's mother's been looking for 6 months for a job. I mean, these are people who don't have money for beans. I'm not sure that they get the encouragement they need to do their homework and to make good grades. You know, they're being raised on the streets and by, you know, a neighbor.
Well, how is this teacher evaluation different from federal No Child Left Behind and all of the stuff that's already going on? What is the actual difference between the increased pressure on teachers that we're already seeing and the additional pressure that this constitutional amendment would apply?
Well, this is a particularly a curious proposal because it would call for development by local school districts of standardized measures for evaluating teachers. And those standardized measures, which would presumably be reflected in tests, would need to be approved at the state level, which strikes me as being a move that would call for creation of a bureaucracy at the state level that may not exist at this point. And So, among other things, it kind of takes local control away and places it at the state level. But what really gets me is that teachers would be prohibited from organizing in any way to participate in this development of the standards against which they would be evaluated. I mean, it is absolutely insulting to the teachers, because many of them work very hard, and in so many cases, they really have no control over how well children are prepared for the school and the curriculum in the first place, and then to have them be held accountable against standards which they have not helped to develop. I know that the teachers' unions are terribly opposed to this, but as women, not all, but a high percentage of teachers are women, and we should be very concerned on their behalf.
You know, all of these things that are happening to teachers right now, I often wonder how we still are getting young people willing to go to school to become educators and, you know, really get the best of what's out there in our youth to come forward and say, yes, I want to work with children and I want to help them achieve their dreams and be all those wonderful visionary things that young teachers believe in with this system. Is that what they're attacking, is our very ability to have these wonderful...
I cannot say that that's the case. I think that there are well-meaning people who believe that teachers need to be evaluated against standardized way. But this particular proposal is terribly flawed. And frankly, to put something like that in the Constitution is really ludicrous.
Historically, though, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, historically, evaluating teachers, the process of evaluating teachers, has been a method by which they exert control. And it's historically always diminished the quality of education. It's been a way of saying, see, we told you that these teachers weren't any good. It's never been a positive growth-oriented thing that's actually child-centered, but it keeps popping back up, this idea that the teachers are what's wrong with everything in a society. And to me, when I hear teacher evaluations, I hear, let's prove that it's teachers that are everything that's wrong with society. And it's a little short-sighted.
Could I interject a devious thought in my mind? Since we know the corporations are running our government because they have all the money, they have the freedom of speech, money is speech now with the United, whatever that was, versus whatever.
Citizens
United, thank
yeah.
you. And doesn't it behoove basically big business to have uneducated people that they can pay low wages to? And wouldn't it be great if they could bring the jobs back to the United States and pay wages like they pay in third world countries? I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying.
I'm just going to throw this in there, too. This is why we really need the listeners to donate to KKFI on KKFI.org, because these big businesses are not going to sponsor this programming.
One thing I'd like to say is that there is a certain individual in St. Louis, an extremely wealthy man named Sinkfeld, who I think most of us have heard of, who has weighed in on education issues. And I won't go into past history, but this is one where he has again weighed in with very large amounts of money to promote this, to get this particular ballot issue on the ballot. And, you know, precisely what his motivations are not clear.
We do have a caller on the line. Caller, could you state your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, this is Sharon. I'm heading in the downtown vicinity. And I just want to ask you to also be sure and speak to Amendment 10 and also reiterate that it would behoove us to vote no to all of the amendments. An amendment is a very important thing. It's a very important step. And not enough scrutiny or transparency has been given to these amendments and what they will mean to us. But this Amendment 10 irritates me because you've got this black woman who's fought all this time on television, and she is so far Republican and used by the Republican Party as a symbol of crossover, which really isn't happening. So if you would please just speak to all of the amendments and our need to be very, very judicious.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Well, this is Linda again. Yes, the League of Women Voters of Missouri has taken a position in opposition to this proposed amendment. This amendment would limit the governor's authority to reduce or withhold line items in order to balance the budget. Yet the governor is legally responsible for balancing the budget. It would eliminate his ability to, for example, respond in case of an emergency because would not have the capacity to or the authority to move funds between line items. An example would be relief for Joplin after the tornado. The governor needed that authority in order to be responsive in that situation. And there's only one other state in the union where the governor does not have this authority to make adjustments between line items, and that is the state of Maryland. And I personally do not know the situation in Maryland and why, but all other states, the governors do have this authority. And I think what they overlook, and the lady whom you referred to in the political announcements that we're seeing, fails to recognize that if this were to pass, and it's a political thing to control a Democrat governor, the same thing would apply to a governor who is a Republican. So I'm not sure, you know, kind of where they're going with this. And the allegations have been made that the governor has reduced funding for education. And I think what we're seeing is that, you know, the legislature made some decisions for some very significant tax cuts, some of which were the governor vetoed them, but some of those were overturned. The vetoes were overturned by the legislature. So the blame cannot be placed entirely, you know, on the governor. This is, and as our caller, Sharon, pointed out, this is a very serious issue. And, you know, we need good government. We need good government all of the time, not some of the time. And this, frankly, would be bad government if this were to pass. Cheryl, do you have more to say on these issues on the Missouri side?
Well, there are a couple of things, but I think I kind of agree with Sharon. We could just vote no on all of them. And then maybe let's go to Kansas, and then we could talk specifics if we have more time.
Well, this is Dolores Furtado, and I'm from Kansas. And I must say that in Kansas, we use the pathway of amending the Constitution far less frequently than you do in Missouri. But we do have an amendment on this particular ballot, and it's to deal with raffles. But We've also mentioned here that it's important for the people, our voters, our young people, to understand how government works. And let me point out, as a former lawmaker and legislator in Topeka, but when you're dealing with issues that are controversial and you cannot get real statutes that are meaningful passed through the chambers, both the House and the Senate, you only need majorities. So when it's a strategy to use amending the Constitution, because whereas in the chambers you do need two-thirds vote for both chambers, but the governor can't stop it after that. Governors can veto statutes that pass through a simple majority. So back to the amendment, it requires two-thirds to get out of the chambers, but the majority vote of the people. Far less scrutinizing, far less aware, far less informed. And it's a strategy for getting things that are controversial, such as gay marriage, such as the raffle nonsense that we have in this amendment. And then in the future, it will be other things that we think about, that such as changing the way that we get our Supreme Court justices to satisfy the politics of the governor.
Well, you know, one thing that when we talk about changing a constitutional amendment, and I said this before we started, was that I'm confused about this idea of using constitutional amendments, because when I hear constitution, I think of the founding fathers and mothers waving their bayonets and their big whatever guns they used with cannon and explosions and gunfire, and Paul Revere writing down here saying, give me, you know, he didn't say that. Whoever said, give me liberty or give me raffle tickets or give me death. I mean, that's what I'm hearing, is that they would be sitting there just, I will go to arms over my right to have a raffle. I will go to arms over my right to not be allowed to vote early on Saturdays. It's a very strange concept to amend a constitution for these kind of really just bureaucratic ideas.
But now I understand why, because it's so much simpler and the people are going to be uninformed, and it's all milk toast language, and it sounds good to them.
And it's a majority regardless of how many vote.
Right, right. So now I know, and then I'll tell you another thing that I do all the time. I know to vote no to all amendments. That'll be my mantra from now on. But I also vote no for all judges. And it's not because the governor appoints them or the county or whomever appoints them. It's because they don't have to tell us about what they're doing. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, but they just show up on a ballot and we don't know anything about their
That's a very important issue, Sharon, that you've brought up, because this year we have a long list of judges on our ballot. And there is an evaluation that's been conducted, a peer review by attorneys who've appeared before them, separated from the judges who evaluate and it's at the appeals court and at the Supreme Court levels. These are justices and judges who are working from decisions made by district judges. And so to have the district judges evaluate your sitting appeals judges and justices is a valid peer review. And I think we need to pay attention to that. We have posted it on our league website.
But I do have to say that this is the first time I've heard of it.
I know. I have had requests this week, and there's a letter to the editor in today's paper on the topic and giving you the link to look at those evaluations.
Well, this should be announced from the top of the hills. They should just be saying, go look at the peer reviews for judges. Yes. I mean, they should have as many ads telling people to look at the peer review as, you know, these other candidates have, saying they're being mean to me and this guy's awful and, oh, he just mean.
This has been a budget victim. We used to have peer review of the justices at the district level as well. But that money has been cut in Kansas, and so we don't have that. And this is private money that's funding this.
We do need to pause for a station break, but we will be right back to join in on this conversation some more.
Our guest this week on Art of the Song is the legendary Motown singer-songwriter Smokey Robinson.
We had the pleasure of talking with him about the release of Smokey and Friends, an album of duets with some of his favorite singers.
This week on Art of the Song.
Art of the Song airs at 7 a.m. on Sundays.
On the next Echo Radio KC, Craig speaks with filmmaker Dana Nachman about The Human Experiment, her latest effort, narrated by Sean Penn, which explores toxins in the home and their health impact. Echo Radio KC, Monday at 6 p.m., right after Mother's Mix.
I was diagnosed at 37 with invasive ductal carcinoma, stage 2. My cancer wanted to move.
This retired federal employee, Bill Claw, is encouraging all my federal employee friends to please consider supporting KKFI during this year's combined federal campaign. That's CFC code 21994. Just a few dollars a week on payroll deductions won't mean much to you, but it'll mean big bucks to us at KKFI. So please consider supporting KKFI. That's agency code 21994.
Support for KKFI provided by The Pitch, presenting The Pitch's Crafts and Drafts. The Uptown Shops at 37th and Broadway will feature local clothing, jewelry, glassware, and over 25 craft beers, such as Tallgrass, Boulevard, Crane, KC Beer Company, Four Hands, Cooper's, Hawk Wine, Crown Royale, and Tito's Vodka. That's November 1st from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for Crafts and Drafts. For more info at 816-561-6061 or at pitch.com. Presented by The Pitch and sponsored by Quintile.
Chris King of the St. Louis American on media coverage of Ferguson on Counterspin, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m.
And we're back with Dolores Furtado, Kansas League of Women Voters president, and we heard earlier from Linda Smith and Cheryl Barnes, who are with the Kansas City League, Clay, Platt, and Jackson County, and we'll hear more from them later. But right now, let's continue our conversation with Dolores.
What concerns us about the retention vote that is before the people for judges and justices is that a lot of the voters are totally unfamiliar with the context, and what they're seeing are ads that highly politicize a decision made by the Supreme Court, a 6-1 decision. That dealt with the murders in Wichita of four people that were proven to be caused by two brothers who are incarcerated and were sentenced to the death penalty. However, the procedure, the legalities of which I'm not totally familiar with, but it was a procedural thing, and so these justices have decided that it either has to go back to the Wichita District Court to determine procedurally if the sentence should be a death penalty, or it should be resolved by just leaving the two men in prison for the rest of their lives. And that is what is before us. And the political aspect of it are the ads that we're seeing repeatedly, say, at the gubernatorial level, Brownback saying that Davis will appoint more liberal judges and will therefore have more liberal outcomes.
So one thing, I thought that Kansas didn't execute people.
We have not done so for years. We have the penalty on the books. It is a possibility, but we have not fulfilled that. No.
So why is that something that would be a negative to say no death penalty in this case?
There is an effort.
Doesn't seem out of the ordinary is all
right.
I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not out of the ordinary. They're trying to do away with the death penalty because it just, if you don't do it, why have it? And that's what the general sentiment is. And life in prison without parole is pretty stringent.
Yes, isn't it? It's just amazing to me how many untruths you're seeing on television, how they just, and nothing has to bear any resemblance to reality to be a political ad. And that just doesn't seem right. Let's give the websites of the league. Laura, start with your website.
Our website is lwvk.org. www precedes it, obviously.
And you can find us through Google. If you Google Kansas City League of Women Voters, we're right there. Or if you want to see statewide issues, you could go to the League of Women Voters of Missouri and find us.
Okay. Yeah, Google works pretty good in most cases.
Yeah.
And League of Women Voters, again, Dolores, is
LWVK.org. And on that, we have the evaluation for judges.
Okay, so they can find that tab very easily.
The link is there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
So what is this constitutional amendment, then, that Kansas is passing? What is that about?
The Kansas constitutional amendment is to make legal the use of raffles by nonprofits, your churches, nonprofit organizations. It has been ongoing for many years, but not legally sanctioned. And it tried by statute. The governor opposed it, and now they're using this, as I described earlier, it's a circuitous strategy to try to get to that. But the statute...
The governor opposed...
The bills as they were... The laws as they were structured.
Having church raffles.
A broader... It isn't limited to churches. They're very careful to say raffles by nonprofit organizations.
That's scary. That's frightening. How could nonprofits hold a raffle? Why is this debatable?
I must confess I did not go and witness the debate in the House before they passed it, so I can't answer that, other than to be amazed that we're facing this as a voting issue in Kansas.
Absolutely incredible. Is this the type of thing that we're seeing a lot of? You hear a lot of lip service being given to common sense and needing common sense legislators and things like that. Something as just normal and pleasant and certainly not a harm to anyone in society as having raffles somehow has become controversial. And does that speak to this idea of common sense being a complete pipe dream within the legislatures of our states?
Amy, I'd like to take you up on that common sense. One of the really strong suits for the league is that it studies a variety of issues, and we bring people in. And at our recent meeting, we had Assistant Prosecuting Attorney for Clay County come and talk to us about Amendment 2 because we had positions on all the other amendments. You know, first, we think they're a bad idea. But we were concerned about Amendment 2 because that talks about juveniles. And one of the points she made, which kind of tugged at our hearts, is that you get a child in a situation and the child has to talk to strangers about, you know, very private things, and in a court, which is a very imposing area. And the prosecutor made the case that she thought we should support Amendment 2 because that would allow them to bring up past behavior by the adults. And it gets, I know, sticky with family members. It gets very difficult for children in that kind of a situation. It could be, you know, the father could be an uncle, it could be a grandfather, it could be anybody, and here's this little child wrecking the family. But she thought it would help them get cases for people who have been convicted before or who have a history of molesting or abusing children to be able to bring that up in the sentencing part of the cases. So she kind of turned, I think, all of us thinking that when it comes to children, perhaps that is one of the constitutional amendments we would support as individuals, not as the League of Women Voters, but as individuals that we would. She made, I think, a really good case. Linda, do you want to say something about that, or do you agree with that? Or
I happen to agree. I was there for this prosecutor's presentation, and historically, it's evidently been difficult to introduce this type of of evidence in either a trial or in the sentencing process. And because of the laws or rules of procedure in such cases. So it, and again, looking at it from a woman's point of view, you know, you want to protect your children and from all harm, and you don't want to see someone who is a repeat offender get off, because unfortunately sometimes they do get off because the evidence is not there, or and as Cheryl indicated, because, you know, it's such a sensitive issue that, you know, all the facts may not come out. So this, of the four constitutional amendments on the Missouri ballot, and as she said, it's not us as a league, but certainly as individuals, we were very swayed that this was one that where a yes vote would be perhaps a helpful one.
But does that still represent the legislature not doing its job and being able to pass sensible legislation that protects children in cases that, well, really, I'd prefer not to talk about them, but since we are, where they're psychologically damaging, they could be dangerous to the child. Is this a failure of the legislature to protect them?
Well, I think there's a failure of the legislature to pass statutes to have the wonderful part of having a legislature is you have debate, you have testimony on these issues, and there is a public record of what is presented, what is discussed, and when something is on your ballot. And you go in, and here it is on the ballot. You haven't been privy, if you will, to any debate on it. I will say, by the way, that here in Kansas City, I think we get, my personal view is that the Kansas City Star does quite a good job of presenting issues and indeed a reflection of what's going on. What is the news on both sides? And their editorial commentary is quite to the point. And indeed, their views reflect very much on these constitutional amendments. So the three that the League has taken a position on, they have the same position. And so there is a lot of public debate in that way, and it's because we have a good newspaper that, in fact, we have that kind of public debate. And I think the letters to the editors are absolutely wonderful, but not everybody reads the paper. You know, we're busy. People are busy. They get their news in sound bites. And so we hope as a league, and I know in Kansas too, you know, there's a desire to have as much discussion, public conversation about these things as we can possibly have.
A very important thing about statutes. Statutes deal with the big picture. Try to describe why the law is being passed, what it's trying to solve. But after that, once it's passed, the implementation phase, it comes under rules and administration of statutes. And so you have an oversight committee that tries to follow what's going on. But I can give you an excellent example of where a law is passed, and the law that we're now dealing with is our Secure and Fair Elections, or the SAFE Act, that was passed by the legislature when it came to the realization that there's a conflict between the use of provisional ballots as dictated by this law for people who have to prove their citizenship versus the provisional ballots that were implemented as a result of HAVA several years ago. That says HAVA, after the 2000 election, passed some federal legislation that said that anybody who shows up to vote at a poll will be given a ballot, a provisional ballot. The supervising judge says why that is so and explains the basis for that decision, which is then reviewed by the election officials and goes before the Board of Canvassers as a recommendation to count or not count or partially count or what have you. The conflict the SAFE law brings to the forefront is that the SAFE law says that you have until midnight on the eve of election day to provide that information or you do not get to vote. So when they appear at the poll the next day and ask for provisional ballot, they will be given a provisional ballot, but that ballot won't even be considered to be counted. It will just be dismissed, not counted, discharged, whatever word least offends you.
So how is that in compliance with HAVA?
Okay. The compliance comes from another controversy, and that is if you use the form, the federal form, for registering to vote, the EAC, which incidentally has no commissioners on it because none of the nominees by President Obama have been approved by the Senate, and so it says that if you use that form, you don't have to provide proof, an affidavit works, but you can only vote for federal offices. The Kansas form requires the proof of citizenship, and if you don't provide that, you don't count. So there are 23,500 people in Kansas who are on the suspense list. If you need to say, well, can I equate that to anything that makes sense? Well, just imagine the entire population in Emporia, Kansas, not being able to vote. That's what we're talking about on this provisional ballot. Big issue.
I'd say so. Is there anything else that we need to be paying attention to in Kansas for this upcoming election on Tuesday?
I would urge people to remember you need the photo ID government issued for voting on Tuesday. And please bring it in August in the primary in Johnson County. We had 50 people who didn't have their ID with them, and only 32 of those got counted, because that's why you have 5 days between election and the canvassing meeting. You can get that information and rectify what you were deficient about and get that to be counted. So photo ID, and people in Kansas are confused. The proof is to register to vote. The photo ID is to vote.
I guess I'd follow up on that and say that we need identification that makes it easier, or the little card that the election board sent you in Missouri. And the polls are open from 6 in the morning until 7 at night, so that's a little bit more helpful. And if you don't know where to vote, then call or check on the Kansas City Election Board. But voting is absolutely critical. We need young people to vote. It's midterm elections, and everybody thinks that it's a throwaway election, but it's not. It represents our federal legislators for the next 2 years are in the House of Representatives, and it represents a lot of local issues that we really need everybody to vote for. And, you know, it really doesn't make any difference how much money you have or don't have. It really is. Everybody's vote is equal. But if you don't vote, then you're throwing away an opportunity to provide management and direction of your community.
I would like to have you give your information to go check on these judges, to look at the issues, to just contact the League of Women Voters in Kansas or Missouri, and leave our listeners with that information.
For Missouri, you can just Google LWVMO Missouri or LWVKC, and you will come up with the websites. And actually, the League of Women Voters commentary on with pros and cons on the statewide ballot issues is accessible on the website. And if there's a listener who doesn't have access, you know, frankly, I get phone calls all the time, and you can call me, 816-741-6110, and we try to give answers to, you know, questions. And if we don't know, we'll try to find out for you. But you can also go to your local library or Google Kansas City Election Board. Or if you're actually live in Kansas City, but, you know, you're in Clay County, you Google Clay County, Missouri Election Board or Platte County, Missouri Election Board. You know, because we seep into, you know, we're in more than one county, you're dealing with more than one election board. So, and lastly, I want to say, too, that in Missouri, you're going to find judges on the ballot as well. And there's actually something called the Missouri Plan that was developed many, many years ago. A lot of states now follow that. It's not applied uniformly across the state of Missouri, but it is applicable here in our area. And indeed, these judges have been vetted and evaluated by their peers. And so you can vote with some confidence on the judges that are on the ballot. We are not endorsing any of those judges, but we do endorse the principles of the so-called Missouri Plan, which applies to, and it's to make these selections non-political. That's what we need, is non-political election of judges.
Well, I did pull the website up, and if you are wondering, it is lwvmissouri.org. Missouri is spelled all the way out, and LWV stands for League of Women Voters. And, Dolores, did you have some contact information that you could give out, or...
Well, for the Kansas League, again, the website is lwvk.org, and the league has the local leagues, Johnson County, LWV Johnson County, is also accessible. And for ballot information, to see your sample ballot, just go on to the Johnson County Election Office and you can call up the ballot and you'll see exactly what your ballot would be like. You can print it out and take it with you to guide you.
All right. I want to thank all of you, Linda and Cheryl and Dolores, for coming in and representing the League of Women Voters and giving us some good information to make informed decisions at the ballot on Tuesday, when I'm sure we're all going to head out and vote on Tuesday.
And now, Amy, I would like to ask you to announce what's happening here next week.
Next Saturday, the Kansas National Organization for Women will be hosting a state conference. We're going to have a wonderful list of speakers talking about women's reproductive health, women at work, women in LGBT, and women minority women and women of color.
And they can contact you for more information?
Yes, at coordinator@ksnow.org.
And it starts at noon, ends at 5, and we will have some sort of a light fare, snacky sort of vegetable plates and chips and dips and stuff like that.
Come for the food, stay for the conversation.
That's good.
And stay tuned now for Urban Connections with Donna Wolfe.